Go.
The date is June 18th, 2009. We are at the Amelia Island Museum of History at 233 South 3rd Street, Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veteran History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing Malin Hubert Hill, who was born October 13, 1926, in Baden, North Carolina. My name is Frank Reitinger, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Don Hill, who will operate the recording equipment. I will now begin the interview. Mr. Hill, if you'll just go ahead and start off from the beginning and go forth.
Okay, well, I was born in a little town, Baden, North Carolina. And my father worked at the aluminum company there. They had a big Alcoa, had a big plant. So I went to school at both places there in Albemarle, North Carolina, because I wanted to play football in that. But we were in High Point, North Carolina, when the war started then. And we were up visiting friends. And somebody came running out and said Pearl Harbor's been hit. And this young man standing there, he was about 18 years old out of school, he said, "I'm going to join the Marine Corps." He said, "That's where I'm going." And from then on, I wanted to join the Marine Corps. I was 13 years old back at that time. I said, "Well, that's what I want." So, make a long story short, we came back home, and in about 3 years, I tried to sneak in when I was 16, and they would have let me. I would have tried to get the clerk of court to clear me, and he wouldn't do it. So I had to wait till I was 17, and I kept begging and begging. My mother didn't want me to go. My father finally said, "If he's that stupid, he doesn't have any sense. Sign the thing. Let him go. Let him. He'll grow up a little bit." So, I ended up going. I joined and went down to Raleigh, North Carolina, to Canton, and it took them about a month and a half or so to call me up. And finally, when they did, I went to Parris Island. And I don't remember the platoon I was in, but Parris Island was quite a place. And I'd had a little bit of, it was real easy, it was a cakewalk for me because I'd been in the National Guard before I went down there. I'd served a year in the National Guard at home, and I knew all of the marching and all that stuff, so it was really kind of easy, and I had a pretty good time till I started laughing one day, and the sergeant made me do the marching manual on my knees, and I never laughed again, but that ended that situation. So at Parris Island, I got double pneumonia just the week I was on mess duty, and it finished everything. And of course, the last week at the island was mess duty, and I got double pneumonia there, and I had to go down, stay in the hospital for a month there. When I come out, I joined another group and went straight to Camp Lejeune, and from there we went on maneuvers and in the swamps and all like that. I guess which was simulating the overseas thing. And then we went to, from Camp Lejeune, we went straight to California, to Pendleton. And we were in Pendleton all maybe a week, not any more than that. And then we were back down. I'm going to say Treasure Island. I don't know. Is that where they shipped out from, Treasure?
I don't know.
Yes.
That's where
we were. In the middle of San Francisco Bay.
Yeah, right there. And so we shipped out there and went to Hawaii. That's when we left out and went over the Golden Gate, and everybody said, "You better wave at it because you may never see it again." So we give a little wave, and of course I went on to Hawaii, and we stopped off there for 3 or 4 days, and at least let us get off and exercise a little bit. Then we went straight from there to Guadalcanal, and going down, we just started out, and we started the zigzag thing on the ship, and everybody said, "Well, we hope we survived this thing." There was three of us and three ships, and they said there's a submarine behind us, and we can outrun him as long as we can keep this pace up, and that was the reason for the zigzag. And so we finally did, and we lost him, and it got on in with no problem. And we got this canal, and we stopped for just maybe a day, and we didn't get off the ship. And went right over to the two islands, which was Benica. One was Benica, one was Babubu. And at that place, we joined the 32nd replacement draft. And from then on, that's what we were part of, is the 32nd replacement draft. And we were there for maybe 3 or 4 months. And here again, we were this going over just training and whatever had to be done. And finally we loaded up and started north, and the boys from Peleliu were back, and there's a lot of stories about that. And that was over, and they were getting rid of it, and they were replacing everybody they lost up there. And it was a kind of eerie situation to hear them talk about it. And the Chester Puller was not liked in that outfit anymore. Chester got a lot of people killed, they said was uncalled for, and he was not really liked. And the old timers, there's a lot of them here on the island, because I remember the Marine Corps League, they'll tell you quick, Chester's not what he's built up to be. And that was one of the things that came out of it. But we loaded up there and went north, and of course we stopped at some island. I'm trying to say Midway, but and got off and exercised for a couple of days, and then we got back on that ship and went straight to Pearl Harbor. We didn't mess around. We went straight in, and when we got there, I didn't know there's that many ships in the world. I never seen so many ships in my life. But any way you look, you couldn't see anything but ships. It was the biggest mass of ships I'd ever seen, I thought, then. And of course, while we were there about a day before we unloaded, and of course the Jap planes were coming in, the kamikazes, and going. I saw one fly right down the smokestack. He just come in and just went in. They thought they hit him, and he went into a dive and just ran right down the smokestack.
Now, where were you now?
That was at Okinawa. We were already there waiting to go in. And of course, the next morning they loaded us up about 4 o'clock, put us in the boats, and we went out and started the circling. And we were the replacements for the first division that landed. They went in about 7, if I remember it serves me right. And we went in about 9:30, something like that. And the first mistake I made in the whole thing going in there, we landed, and of course it was just like you'd run the first wave, you go in the same way. And here comes two Jap planes flying down the beach, and I jump under a duck to get out of the way of it. And when he goes by and get out, that duck's loaded with ammunition. I said, now I'm about to go in, I'm going to look what's in that duck before I get under it. I didn't get blown sky high. But anyhow, we went out, and then from that day, of course, the 1st Division had it made. They had the middle of the island and went straight across, and they took the airport there before the Japs even knew it, and the Japs even flew a plane back in and didn't know that the airport was gone, and of course they shot him down there. But they really moved. The 6th Division went to the north, and they had a hard time. And the 27th or the 77th, I forget which one, Army, went south, and they had a hard time. But the first went straight across, lost very few men on their thing, and it went straight through the thing, and they were ready to go. And we were there maybe 2 weeks, no more than that. And everybody was unloading ships coming in. We were carrying everything in the world, unloading them in just lines from, 50 yards out and whatever. And then one day we were sitting there having chow, and then here comes a plane over, and the man looked up. He said, "Well, that's the generals." He said, "You won't be here tomorrow." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "We're going south." He said, "I'll bet you we're going south." And that was true. They came over that afternoon, and they assigned us to the 1st Division. That was my first day in the 1st Division. They came over and wanted volunteers for the machine gun squad, and me and my friend from South Carolina, Jimmy Hooks, we volunteered for the machine gun outfit. Everybody said, "Well, why'd you do that?" Well, the machine gun, we got to sit back and lay down to cover fire a lot of the time. We'd lay the fire down for the people. And we didn't have to make that run up the hill a lot of the time when they did. So I figured out that's better than walking infantry. If I do that, it would work. So we did. We went in that. And of course, that was another education you had to learn. You fire so many rounds here and you jump to another hole because the mortar boys pick you up. You fire from there, you like a blizzard like that, they're going to drop that mortar in it. So you just figure out, try to outfox them, they're going to drop it here. You move there so you don't stay in there just a little bit and keep moving. All that you learn, and that's where to get you to the mortars.
You know.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was an education, learning about the mortars. And then, you know, you get assigned to a certain machine gun squad, and that's what we did. We had, when I joined up, we had 55 men in that machine gun squad, and five of them walked off. It didn't kill them all, but they were either wounded or killed. And then that, people don't realize, I don't think, how many people that were lost at Okinawa. And it was a big turnover. And it was, as I say, an education. You had to learn this and where to go and what to do. And we would chart. We would go with the infantry, too, when they moved out. If it wasn't our turn to lay down fire, we went with the infantry and all like that. You know, one morning and to start out with, before you ever get to be a machine gun, to run the gun or operate the gun, you carry ammunition. And I carried two cans of ammunition, and me and two or three other boys up the road. And we jumped off. Everybody, I was behind, and everybody jumped off a little place there. And that Jeff caught me, and if I had a rifle cleaner, you know, the little thing that you put the patch in and you go up and down with the cleaner attached to the pack back there. And he hit that rifle cleaner, saved my life. And I about crapped my pants when I got down there and saved one of that. But other than that, it worked out good. And of course, we laughed about it later. But that was what was part of the whole thing. But as it went on, we lost men. And people don't know. I didn't realize this as much, but people don't know how close we came to losing that thing over there, to letting the Japs come back and really take over. Because we didn't have the men. We were down to just practically nothing up there. I remember a couple of nights staying from here to the street in a trench outside by myself on a machine gun, and nobody there, because we had this whole line we had to take care of. And we sent out the people. We were like 30 yards, 40 yards apiece, and that's the only way we could do it to cover it. But it worked out, and everything, you know, came out okay. But we went through Death Valley, which all of you remember. If you've read about it, it'll be in that book, where Death Valley, where you go through it. And that was quite an ordeal. That was my first baptism into really, really fire and seeing what was going on and how it was operating, how the war was going. Of course, we had to pull back that night. We didn't have enough men to cover the hill. We had to come back. We came back to a creek, which the Japs could not choose from. We had to carry the wounded out. And one thing about the Marine Corps that I'll never forget, we never left a man laying on that field. We brought him out. Dead or alive, we brought him out. I thought quite an honor to the Corps, but so we came out, and the next morning we jumped off again and went on through and took it and moved on, and we got through Death Valley and set up over there, and we were waiting to move again for orders to move out, and we had an Army outfit about maybe a half mile way around, and we had moved so fast I think we got ahead of them and they didn't know who it was. All of a sudden, they hit us with 388s, and it wiped out four or five of our boys. I mean, just blew them up. And of course, we had to get that stopped. And that really, really got to us bad. And the morale of it really hurt a little bit. But we came back, and it was okay. And we kept on going, moving through Death Valley, and finally got around to looking at Sherry Castle. Sherry Castle was supposed to be the breaking point on Island. You take Sherry Castle, you break their back, and from then on it should be downhill. But it rained for 17 days and nights. It didn't quit. And y'all ain't going to believe what I tell you, but those big shells would hit in the mud, and some of them didn't go off. And that's how wet it was and how messy it was. And nobody could move. The only thing you had to worry about was lobbing a shell over once in a while, and you couldn't stay dry. Me and my buddy dug a foxhole in the bank. The damn thing caved in over for a night. We had to come out of there in a hurry, but it was amazing that during that time that's how you learn people and learn about. We had a boy named Kelly in there that he could actually smell Japs. He just had a nerves for it, and if he told you there were Japs in front of you, you better get ready because they're there. And he'd walk in a cave. You could have paid me to walk in those caves over there. He'd walk in, and he'd get in a little bit, and he'd say, come out and say, there's a Jap in there, we better keep moving. Or you might hear him shoot somebody, but he got all kinds of souvenirs. Everybody, but I never got hurt, never got scratched. Come out of it. He'd been at that Peleliu, and he'd made that, both of them. He come out and never got scratched in that whole thing, which was remarkable. He told us one night, he came over, he came up down there, he said, that whole valley's full of Japs that they're going to hit. Said that whole thing. And of course, they turned the artillery on and it wiped them out. They never did get a chance to. But there's people like that, you learn what they're all about. And then who you more or less trust a little bit too, and who you can't stand by with. But when that was over, when that rain stopped, this be something about this in the book too, I think. That the captain called the colonel, he said, it's dry. He said, how about letting me send a
patrol
out up to Sherry. He said, go ahead, if you think you can get up there, go ahead. They did. They went and come back, radioed back, said, there's nobody here, there's 10 Japs over here in the pool taking a bath, come on up. And we jumped on that thing. You can't believe how fast you can leave a place, but we did. And Sherry Castle had very little loss. We lost very few men on it taking Sherry Castle. And we occupied it and kept it for a night, of course, then we moved out. But that's where all the controversy came in, because Butler had planned another Ewo. He was going to raise that flag on it. He was going to have another Ewo there. And it didn't work out. It was gone. He didn't even know it was gone until we had it. And we lost very little life, but Sherry Castle was a tough place. The Navy would shoot those 18-inchers, they'd ricochet right off that thing. Just ricochet right off that building. We couldn't believe it, but it was just amazing how some things were built. But we stayed there and moved on out from Sherry Castle and on down, and the rest of it was just one thing after another. You take one hill and another hill, and finally, pretty well got down to the end of the whole thing. The Japs were jumping off and off the cliff and still surrendering. And finally, a few of them did surrender, but the women and children all were jumping off. And that was the end of it, pretty much. We the Army came in and helped us clean up. I believe it was the 27th. Had one of the best fighting machines I've ever seen. They knew what they were doing. That was a great outfit, and they had cleaned up down there. And it was really nice. And I think the same 27th, if I'm not mistaken, lost their flag at one of the islands sometime earlier during the war. But they came back, and they would have never lost anything here. They were really great.
That was an Army work, the 27th.
27th, yeah.
Division.
Yeah, and it was great, and. From there on, we started cleaning up, mopping up, and started moving back north. And of course, they declared the battle would be over, but it wasn't by no means. They were in the caves and everywhere else, and we had to do that. Well, about 3 or 4 days out, I got malaria, and I had to go into sick bay. And I missed all the trip back up to the north, where they finally set up camp. In the sick bay where they cleaned up and everything, which didn't bother me too much. I didn't want the malaria, but I just seemed to be away from that other stuff out there. But we were up there and set up and everything. We started training. And of course, as soon as I got over the malaria, I went right back to the same outfit. And we started training to go to Japan, right there at the Kyushu. We knew exactly where we were going on. There was no more secrets. We knew where we were going, and we started training to go to Japan. And of course, all of a sudden, the war was over. The bomb was dropped, and the war was over. And I think it was maybe the worst time we had. We had to hit the foxhole on the county flat. Everybody was celebrating. All those ships out there firing up in there, we had to hit the ground because they were firing everywhere. They were having a ball. But that was a happy occasion. We were all very happy in that. That thing was over, so because we knew what was going to happen if we went to Japan, and They didn't even hesitate. They would tell you. They'd just say, this is where we're going. In fact, the colonel even came in and he said, have you people got your wills made out? And everything was said, most of we're coming back. Said, we're going to probably lead this invasion and we aren't coming back. This will be the end of it. And you would think that would destroy someone. Nobody said, what the hell? That's the name of the game. It didn't faze anybody. If that's going to happen, it's going to happen. And that's the way it went. So that was, I'll never forget that, the way that came in.
Before we go on, of you leaving Okinawa, talk about what was it like at night when you were in a foxhole in Okinawa? What were the nights like?
Well, it was eerie as hell because you were there by yourself. Most of the time, we didn't have enough men to have buddies with us. But to start with, most of the time you try to keep two people in the foxhole together. But we didn't have enough men, and that thing was, it was scary. I was just 18 years old, 17 or 18. I don't know whether I was 18 yet or not. But yeah, it was scary.
How did you handle the threat of infiltrators? I mean, did you listen for them, fire, star shells?
Oh, you couldn't fire at night. You had to do it with a knife. The word came down to you, no firing. Oh. And you fixed the bayonet, and of course everybody had a knife too. And that was it. You either killed him with a knife or the bayonet or else. You did not fire at night. When they came down, no firing. Huh. You didn't fire. And some of them talk about how they would they could hear them crawl by. I never had that. They said crawl by going in and then crawl back out. Hmm. And nobody, could call them or anything else. But I never had any of that. And I never had any to get that close to me when I was on machine gun duty.
How about when you faced the caves? What was your approach to face the caves and shoot flamethrowers, et cetera? How did y'all do that?
Well, most of the time we hit a cave, and if there was any sign of a sniper or anything, we'd call a tank up or a plane, and the tank would shoot it with
flamethrower.
Yeah, what was it?
Flamethrower.
Yeah, but what did they shoot
napalm.
It with?
Napalm.
Napalm. Yeah. They'd hit it with napalm, and if they wanted a tank around the Air Corps, because the Marine Air Corps came in, they were just beautiful. Hmm. They were got what a great outfit. You'd come in and they'd tell you, say, fire snipe, fire up what am I trying to say? I forget it. The thing that tells you where the bullet's going, tracer.
Yeah.
They'd say, fire a tracer. You'd fire that tracer, and about 2 minutes later, that cave was gone. He put a rocket right in that sucker.
How did y'all deal with the civilians that were probably in these caves, too?
Very few of them. We had very few civilians on at the Sherry Castle. We had some civilians we had to deal with, but we dealt with very few of them. And the people that went south, really, the Army caught the civilians. They caught Naha and all that. We took the airport and all that, and they went south and took the and just left. We left nothing standing that anybody can hide behind. That was the theory. Knock it down so nobody can hide behind as you went by. And that's what we tried to do.
Beside the threat of mosquitoes and malaria, did you deal with snakes or other critters?
Did see a snake while I was there.
You didn't?
Did see a snake, but we used to laugh about it. And we had one that threw one out. Said, what you going to do if a snake? Because they knew I was afraid of snake. I ain't damn snake bad. He said, what you going to do if a snake? I said, I'm getting out. He can have it. I'm giving him the foxhole. No, hell, you ain't even. We had very little of it. And we were trained, though, in the to watch out for the snakes, the coral snakes. That was the big thing.
How about dealing with American tanks? Did you work with them, coordinate attacks? Or
greatest people in the world, and you follow them up, and most of the time we just sit and wait. We had and call for the tank support, and they'd be close, and they'd just come up, just blow them away. They were really great. Usually two or three men would be behind him, one with the phone, telling him what to do and all that. But yeah, they were great.
Okay.
Yeah, we had some of those, especially at the end, and right in the middle of Okinawa, we had a lot of tanks. And the tanks didn't have much of a chance that one time. Too hilly. up and down. But you can't believe the hills over there where they were totally dug out. It's just like, I don't know how to compare it to something, but let's say we got a half a mile thing up here. They dug that thing out, and they had troops all in that thing. And we actually saw they dynamited it, they found it out. We actually seen one sink about a foot when they just like that when they dynamite.
That was the question I was going to have, dynamiting. Would you typically dynamite a cave just to close it up?
Yeah, they dropped that C3 or C1, whatever it was. And those boys were good. They dropped that stuff in, down in them things.
Who were the guys that did that with
Demolition Squad.
Demolitions?
Yeah, they were good at it.
Seal those caves, huh?
Just nothing. And if they thought anything was still in there, they'd bring the flamethrowers in. That was the best thing of all, was the flamethrowers.
How about the Marines and soldiers that were carrying flamethrowers? Do you have any comments on their job? Or?
No, I didn't. I never seen one get hit, but I heard about it. It of course, you know, all it was a flame, but I didn't see anybody get hit with the flamethrower. But
they were probably picked on by snipers, whatever.
Oh yeah, they'd all, if they could, they got them right quick, and they were very much picked on. And of course, the corpsmen were great in their thing there. You never let a corpsman buy a drink. He would buy him drinks for life. Yeah. Those boys had more guts than anybody, I think, in the whole outfit. So if you holler corpsman, he came. And some of them didn't come back. Some of them got shot out there, but they came, and it was a great. Mm-hmm. They were great people.
So once they declared the island secure, but you knew there were leftover Japs and Japanese and snipers. What was life like then?
Well, it was a lot different than what it used to be. Of course, I just got started and made a few things. And we'd find them hiding in cane fields and all like that. And then I went to sick bay. But nobody really worried about it because they'd flush them out. And if they seen one, they'd get rid of them right quick. So it wasn't that bad cleaning up, coming back. So it was right neat.
So what happened to you then after you came out of sick bay?
Well, I came back out of the malaria and went back and joined my outfit. And here's where the fun started. Right after that, because I told you the war ended, and the man that dropped the atomic bomb, you know, and it was all over. And everybody, the boy just cut a butt, started talking and said, we're going to New York, 1st Division, made more landings over here than anybody in the Marine Corps. We're going up there. 5th Regiment's going with them, and we're going to march down 5th Avenue and get that ticker tape parade. Man, that was just all just floating all over that place. And I had a buddy that was in the office thing, what do you call it?
Headquarters
thing. That he said, come over here. He was laughing. I said, what the hell's going on? He said, we're going to China. I said,
boom.
What? He said, don't you tell them damn people. Said they're too happy. He said, let them alone. He said, but we're going to China. I said, we'll probably start loading up tomorrow. And we did. Right after that, we started loading up and then went to China. And that was nobody in the world could have better duty than China. We went over and sent the Japs home, and it was just great duty. We landed and of course went to Tientsin and went up to Peking and got to see the Forbidden City when it was in that, and stayed, spent a night in there, and it was just a lot of fun. And it really turned into fun because you really wasn't worried. And if you got messed up, it was accidental. Of course, the communists were all around, and we went on Liberty. We carried pistols. We never went on Liberty without a pistol. And because you might be over here walking, and the communists over here fighting on the next street. It was that bad, just one street over. You didn't bother them, they didn't bother you. So we just, but you always had to have the protection.
What was supposed to be your mission in China?
To get rid of the Japs. Send the Japanese home.
Send them home? Yeah. So they were already there, and you all processed them, put them on ships?
Put them on ships. We loaded them out. And we ended up, for a long, I stayed almost a year in China. Oh. And they, we shipped the Japs home, but we, as I say, we went to Tientsin and Peking, and then they shipped us down to a little place called Taku, down on the water where the ships come in. And our job was to load them up and load the Japs up and get them out of there. And we did. That was our job then. And then after that, we went out and we guarded railroad bridges, anything with a bridge, from the because the communists were blowing them up.
Oh, really?
And it was our job to go out and trade them. So we had Quonset huts out there with them, and they'd send you out there for 30 days and on duty. So that was that could be a little bit scary because you were out there by yourself. And that's when this thing happened here. When this boy and I went, the sergeant and I, they'd ask for something was wrong or broke or something. We'd come by, we went over, of course, the communist medicine killed him.
Yeah, I saw that newspaper article.
And I got away, so I hit the water little ditch there, and I hit that and got out of there. But
they were shooting at Americans, huh?
Oh, yeah. The communists were after that. That was bad news. And, of course, I came back, we got a platoon, and we just went over, and they, of course, they were gone. The communists were gone, and we never found out anything about who it was or what it was. But
when you were shipping prisoners, Japanese prisoners back, did the Chinese civilians and military show much animosity toward these Japanese after what the Japanese had done?
No, I think they were just glad to get rid of them. And we were shipping a lot of families home. It was amazing how many families the Japanese had over there. Huh. And we were shipping those home too, wives and all. And they didn't react that bad. I had told them, they had another war coming on just as bad with the communists, and they knew it. But we finally got rid of them. That China was great, dude. And we got to go all the way, let us have liberty and go to all these places and do that. But at the end, we started guarding those bridges. It got a little bit touchy. But other than that, that was about it. And everybody was wanting to come home, you know, and you had to have so many points. And phone would ring, everybody would say, "Who's going home? Who's going home?" So you go after that thing. I got lucky one day, it was me. And of course, I caught the train and went on down. And had a great trip home. You would have loved it. We got on that boat, of course, but we all wanted to go home. And we would get as fast as we could. This captain came on and he said, "Gentlemen," he said, "I'm retired." And he said, "I've never seen Iwo." He said, "I've never seen the Philippines." And he said, "There's two or three more islands I want to see." And said, "We're going to see them all." He said, "It'll be 30 days, 30 to 35 days before we get home." And he said, "Just sit back, relax. We got plenty of food." He said, "Don't worry about it." But he said, "That's what it's going to be." And that's what it was. We went to all these places and we shot, I bet you we shot four or five mines on the way home. We'd get in close to these brown Philippines, all that, you know, when he was taking movies and all that about it, you know, and they just called for it. It didn't bother them. They just, somebody said, "Mine, so-and-so," and they'd get rifle up and phew, and that thing exploded. We'd go on about our business. That was the end of that.
You're correct.
But that was a long trip home, and but it was fun.
Did you stop and go ashore at any of these islands?
No, we didn't do that. We stayed on the boat the whole time. Uh-huh. I got lucky on that. I was upstairs one day and just talking about ice cream. I said, "Man, I haven't had ice cream 2 years." I said, "I've been out there. I'd love that thing." He said, "Come on, I'll get you some ice cream." We went down. This was Master Arms on the boat. He'd go and do whatever he wants to. So I went down and got some ice cream. And he said, "Why don't you go on officer's mess?" And I said, "Hell, I don't want to be on mess, do you?" I had no of that for us. I said, "No, I said, tell you, go on there." I said, "The food's great." And said, "You can sleep up there on one of their tables in their dining room." I said, I'll make rain for you to sleep up there." He said, "It's cool and nice." I said, "You just taught me into it." So I went on officer's mess, and I had a ball. One night, some lieutenant came in and threw me out. He said, "You can't get in. I ought to put you in the brig." I said, "Oh, I'm gone, lieutenant. I'm gone." I found the master. He says, "You point him out to me." So I did, but came to, and I told him, he called him offside. He says, "You you bother anybody about me again. He said, I'm going to take you down. I said, don't you bother my men.
Were the crew on this ship civilians or military?
Military.
So it was the Navy?
Oh, it was the Navy, yeah. We were on what they call them, APAs. I believe that's what they call those ships back then. Made by the outfit out in California. What was it, Danny?
Kaiser
made those ships. Yeah. They were done with troop ships stacked up with bunks top to bottom. But everybody got along, and everybody knew what it was. And it was after everything was all and done, since I was alive and all, money couldn't have bought the war or the trip, the things I'd done. When the war was over, my Captain Julian Newsberry, he was, I told you, he lived in Florence, South Carolina. That's only about 100 miles from where I live. So I called him one day and they told me, he said, Lord, yeah, come down. Like, we'll talk a while. So I went, and that's where I found out how close we come to losing our butt. He said, man, said, if you people have known how close we were to losing, he said, we lost. He said, y'all wish we wouldn't have stayed there. He said, it was so close. He said, I have done time. We just about lost it all. But I didn't get around. I was telling you about all that traveling, and I missed one. I apologize. I want to tell you about Buckner. Well, we were up, and it was really, we were having a hard time, and we were trying to send some tanks across. And the Japs had an 88. They'd come in from Germany somehow. They had got one in there. And they had it backed up in the hills, in that cave or whatever it was. And when the tank started out, they'd run that thing out, and they'd blow it away. And we were trying to get that thing sealed up, and the Air Force hadn't got it sealed up. They hit it two or three times, they still came back out. So here comes Buckner up in his Jeep, and he's riding up, and I don't know who told him, somebody told him, said, General, it's hot up here. Said it's hot up here now. The pre-burst and everything. He said, it's not my first time on the front line, that was his words. And he picked up the glasses, and when he picked them up, they wasn't up there 30 seconds, and he was dead.
Sniper
got him out of hand, and it just that quick.
Wow.
And of course, there's all those kinds of stories, and you won't find that in that book, but that's exactly what happened. And if he'd listened to be alive today, but I guess he wanted to show the people he was a German. But they, other than that, got discharged, came home.
Where did you get discharged?
Camp Lejeune. Camp Lejeune, and I came out and got a scholarship at University of North Carolina, played a little football. It was real funny when I got discharged. That colonel was there. He said, Mr. Hill said, we'll give you two stripes. If you stay in 4 years. You sign up 4 years, they give you two stripes. I said, Colonel, we'll stay in for your job. I said, I'm going on to play a little football. He said, sign this damn paper. He made me mad. He said, sign this paper. I said, okay. So I'm out of there. I remember that well. And then I joined, like an idiot, I joined the reserve, Marine Corps Reserve. When the war started in
Korea,
I said, time to get out. So I lied to them. I told them I was going to get back in the National Guard, and they let me out. But I sure did lie, because I wouldn't have joined the Salvation Army back then, much less anything else. But that was about the end of my story.
Did that unit get called up?
No, they didn't. No, they never did call up. And I went on, and then I went to school, and then came out and went to work selling hospital furniture, sold. Doctors like sutures and all that stuff a year, and I started selling hospital furniture. Stayed with them 40 years.
Wow.
What
got you to Nassau County?
I was down in Jacksonville, and we closed our place up in Indiana. I worked out of Batesville, Indiana, Hillenbrand Industries, and they closed down for 2 weeks. A friend of mine up in South Carolina, we always took our families to the beach for a week during that time. We couldn't find a place to stay. And Marcus Drew, who was a good friend of mine, still is, was the head of Methodist Hospital. He was an administrator of Methodist Hospital. And we were talking and said, why don't you go up to Bernadina? They're building a new condo up there. He said, you might like it. He said, wouldn't hurt you to call that hospital up there one time. I said, I bet you'd never call. I said, I didn't even know they had one, Mark. So I came up here and I looked at that. It was immediately by the sea when they built it. I come out and I looked at it. And we like walked up on the front, on the fourth floor, and I said, how much is this? He said, $42,000. I said, draw up the paper and I want this one right here. So I've been coming here ever since.
And when was that? When did you?
God, that
a long time ago?
Yeah, well, that thing's been there, what, 30 years?
I don't know.
When I came here, there was nothing. It was a ghost town. When you came in, you bought whatever you needed at that little 7-Eleven store in Muley on the right. As you come in, that's all it was open. It wasn't anything else. They had a grocery store up there where the theater is now. They had a grocery store and a dime store. A little bit of stuff in there, and that was it. There was nothing else on this island. And it was kind of nice because people, the greatest people you ever met in your life. You could just go around. Everybody had a good time. The surf was right across from us down at that place. And I forget what this boy's name is, but it became a good friend. He did that. He owned the surf, and I had three children, and we'd be off fishing or doing something. And I said, these kids come over, I said, if they want something, I said, let them have it, I'll pay you when it comes. He said, well, any time. So the children would go over and they'd buy something. I'd go in, he'd give me one bill, you know, and he'd say, Mr. Taylor, the children been in. I said, okay, and I'd sign that, and that was it. But that's the way the people were. They were just great. And I bought a place in the immediate south, too. And I bought it to sell, and I did sell it, so.
Well, between your upbringing and Marine Corps, how did all that affect you, and what did you learn from those experiences that helped you for the rest of your life?
Well, I grew up. I was raised in the country, and we didn't have anything. We were a very, very poor family, as you know, the Depression was ending. But we had 3 acres out there. We had plenty of food. We had a garden, and my mother canned and done everything like it. You can't imagine what she canned for. But we didn't have anything else. The first shirt I ever, first bought shirt I ever had was, I had to be in a, I was in a mixed quartet in high school, and I had to make a picture. I didn't have a white shirt. So I had to go buy a white shirt. And my mother always made everything for us. She'd take my brother's pants when he'd wear a hole in the back of them. She'd take the legs off and make me a pair of pants. And that's the way we grew up. And of course, the discipline and all in there never bothered me. That did not bother me at all, because that's the way I grew up, to do what you're told. Of course, that little stay in the National Guard helped. But I just plain grew up. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Instead of a kid, when I came out, I was a grown kid, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it very, right now, as I say, I enjoyed it. I would not take anything for that. Since I came out alive, and I tell you, I get so sick about hearing these people complaining and march and all that stuff. And what if those boys land on those islands, they'd be speaking Japanese or French or German one, but you can't tell. They don't. They don't know. And the history of it, you know, the kids don't know the history of them. Mm-hmm. What's that? They talk about us, the Japanese, and this is whatever you want to do. My friend called me and he said, you can't believe it. So my daughter and my son's in Japan teaching English. He said they asked him to go over and teach English. And he said he went to a restaurant. And said there was some Japs back there. And he said, they called him over and he said, what do the American people think about dropping those bombs on our people and killing all our women and children? And he said he didn't know what to say because he didn't know anything about it. He didn't know it. Well, he said, well, he knew that there was a bomb, but he didn't know anything about that. Point being, nobody knows about that. Nobody, even the Japanese, don't know. And all you'd have to say, what did they do to Pearl Harbor? Just kind of a turnaround. He didn't say anything about them getting Pearl Harbor and all. But, it's sad. It really is sad.
Yeah. All right. Do you have any questions?
I admire the manner, Mr. Hill, in which you praised your fellow servicemen and the other units with which you came in contact. More often than not, people complain about the other outfit, that you were one who praised all those people who supported you, especially the corpsmen. I commend you on that.
Yeah, that.
How do you feel about the Marine Corps today?
Oh, I think it's still a great outfit. I just hope, I get worried about it, that the Army makes it go so liberal, you know, that they can't do this and do that. I worry about it. But I don't think there's ever been a better fighting outfit in the world than the Marine Corps. I think the discipline is the main thing. I think that you... I take that back. I go back maybe, you know, the Air Force, the Airborne, the paratroopers, and maybe a couple outfits around, but on a large scale. I think if I had a job to do, I'd send the Marines on it. The thing that really admired me, I think, most about the Marine Corps was the fact somebody's going to die. And it may be me, but the job has to be done. We've got to do the job. And the dying thing basically didn't enter your mind. That didn't, we had a job to do and you've done it. Cool, sure, you've got that first thing you'd ask after you push on a hill. You go around and seek your buddies or alive, things like that. But as far as somebody could say, hey, John just got hit, and they'd say, you wouldn't, they'd say, damn, or something like that, and you keep going. You didn't have time to look, see John was there, or anything else. You kept moving. But the point being, your mind was trained to do a job. We were trained to do a job. And that's, is that the way you got it? Yeah, we had a job to do, and we have to do it.
Absolutely.
And if it, yeah, you just don't see them. You just don't see people. I hear them talking about Tarawan, and I know you've heard about it. They said the boys that landed in the second or third wave, he said you couldn't hardly get them on the shore for dead people. He said the kids in the water on the sand, he said you just had to step over. But it didn't stop anybody. That's my point, is they kept coming. They had a job to do and they kept coming. And you say, well, maybe that's stupid, but you got a job to do, you got to do it.
All right. Well, this concludes our interview with Malin Hill. We want to thank you for service to the country. We appreciate it, and you're a real American. So we'll conclude the interview now. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank y'all for having me up here. I didn't know that you did this or had any idea, and I just want to thank you for inviting me up.
You're welcome. Thank
send
you.
Send your friends over.
Yeah,
we're running. We're hard. At first, when we started this program, we were finding plenty of people. Now it's hard. Now, like I found you accidentally talking to your daughter-in-law,
Pat,
because I'm a volunteer in the GE lab over at the hospital, and his daughter-in-law is a nurse there. Ah. And I was talking to somebody about it, and she overheard. But spread the word to anybody you know, and we'll get to them and do this. Because it's pretty painless, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And you talk, when you get around people who have been there, you know, you talk. But I wouldn't dare sit down in a bar somewhere and go through this conversation.
I wouldn't do it either.
It just
But you'd be glad you'll have this, especially for your family.
Yeah, the children will enjoy it.
They can now know what you went through.
But to be alive and to go through that and to have the knowledge that we come out with from the combat deal, it's amazing. And I think about the boys and they went on D-Day the way they got there and the way they still go back and honor the people that were there. I think that's fantastic. I think that's just great.
It's always interesting when you read or talk to guys about they really didn't fight for their country and mom's apple pie. They fought for the guy next to him.
Yeah.
And that was the mentality of, you know, to take care of your buddies and the Corps and all this other stuff eventually. But really, right now, it was the guys around you that you were fighting for and fighting with.
It was just great. Good. So many good people. I really, tears come. I'm not trying to get sentimental. But I hear all this crap about people doing this and they're going to do that and all. And I think about all the good people that did over there that lost their life fighting for everybody to have freedom and all like that. These people don't care. That doesn't faze them one bit.
Well, they don't. You had a good point about the education I imagine in the Japanese history book, Pearl Harbor may not even be included. But they probably spent a lot of time talking about Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Oh, yeah, that was the whole point.
Yeah. And as you guys know, because of the expected losses for the invasion of Japan would have been just tremendous.
Well, and the people now, I was watching O'Reilly the other night. Now you may watch it, may not.
Oh, yeah.